Kuf Chaf Halach Kuf Lamed Beis. You okay? Are you okay? What? Are you okay? You feeling okay? Well, page Kuf Chaf. Page Kuf Chaf Halach Kuf Lamed Beis. The bottom of the page. Okay, advice. He goes into a sugya of giving advice to a person. Im Yishal Adam Eitza Mimcha. A person comes to you and asks for your opinion. What should you do? Today, I don't know. That's what you should say. Don't give advice so quickly. But he writes here, if your data loy, if you know your data loy, if you know the person, he writes something very, very important. What's good for you is not what's good for him. Some of these things are so simplistic. I don't know. I always question why we need Sfarim to learn some of these things that are so simplistic.
Like, these are principles of counseling.
You don't do what's good for you. Okay.
You do not offer your advice. You try to bring out what
you let the person speak and let the person, like, go to people who are counsel boys and dating. You don't. They come to the Rosh Shiva. I've seen this a couple of times. They go to the Rosh Shiva and they say, "I'm dating this girl, and I don't know if I should propose." Usually, the statistics are when they come to a shiva and they ask that question, about 95% of the time they end up getting engaged to the girl. Okay, that's a fact. But they come to a shiva and they tell the shiva, "I'm dating this girl. She's very good, but there's one thing that's bothering me. This is bothering me. I don't know what to do. Tell me what to do. Tell me your advice." So a good Rosh Hashiva will never, ever, ever tell the boy what to do. Never. What he will do is, well, let's talk about it. And the boy, and basically basically a good psychologist or a good Rosh Hashiva who's trained, you dare tell him what to do, because you don't know what's
how serious he's taking whatever his problem.
But what life will bring him,
whatever it is.
But let's talk about it. Tell me about her. Tell me her milas. Tell me what's bothering you. Tell me why
doubts.
If your doubts, if you think you can overcome it. And you let the person express himself again. And through the person himself expressing himself, he on his own will come to a natural decision. You don't give a person a decision in life what to do. Your goal is just let the person, you bring it out. Let the person express himself so that he can understand himself what the issues are, so that he can make his own responsible decision. That is aleph beis. Okay, you don't need books to teach you that, but unfortunately some people don't know that. Some people, you go to them and yes, they say, "Should I do the sheikh?" And they say, "No." You tell them, "No." What?
Rabbis have the advantage of a Rosh Yeshiva. Supposedly they know what they've
been trained.
Supposedly.
Yeah, you wish. Sometimes the pastoral counseling does more harm than good. Okay, sometimes it's usually a matter of you got it or you don't. All of this stuff, and very good. There are definitely techniques, new things you learn, and it's all good. But usually, when the end of the day is either you're a natural person and you go for training to enhance your skills, but if you're not natural to go to school and to train for these skills and social skills especially, it just doesn't go. Computers also, programming. I know programming. It's either you got it or you don't. You cannot be trained to be a computer programmer. You can take a guy and you can sit with him for days and days. You can teach him. If you don't have that chush, it just doesn't go. If you have the chush, then you go for training. Wow, they can make you from just, you know, an average or below average, they can propel you to becoming your genius. But it's a certain natural quality you need, aptitude, and that is 100% critical when it comes to social skills. That it's there is really, maybe you can train a robot to be a computer programmer. Maybe you can. But social skills, it's either you got it or you don't. You see this over and over again dealing with people. It's just, that's how it is. So here is a very critical halacha.
In psychology, there is a style Rogers. Rogers was one of the persons sick
and he created a way that the sick person should heal himself. He should tell what he do. As you said, that
Kevorkian? Kevorkian?
No, he was a sick person.
What?
I meant that probably he
to
had...
teach him how to overcome the resistance to commit suicide. Come to me and I will,
no,
I will
he
himself help you.
Created a way that he, the person should himself...
Kill himself.
Solve the problem.
And the problem is to kill yourself, to commit suicide.
No, he's very famous.
Okay. Right, okay, I don't know. You're right. You are correct. That's exactly what it says on that. Over here, he's making another point. Over here, there's a situation that what I told you is not the case that he's discussing. I discuss a case where you have that person needs to make a decision in life, so you come to a Talmud Chacham, or you come to a person, and he will help you make a decision. He will help you that you can make your own decision. However, there are times, though, where really your expert advice is needed. Okay, there are times when your expert, the person, does not know what to do, and your expert advice is dealing more technical matters. I need to know, is it a good business decision to buy this house? Is it a good business decision? I want to invest, I have an opportunity to invest. So I know nothing about real estate, about stocks, about finance, I know nothing. So, no, unless you go to a person who's in the business, whatever, not. And the person who you go to is an expert. He is an expert. This is what he does the entire day. And the answer, he knows every situation is different for a young person. This is what is correct. For an older person, this is what is correct. A person in this situation is what is correct. So now, what advice? Now, then there are situations where it can go both ways. And what would you do? So if it was me, this is what I would do. And therefore, I want to create you in my image. But that's not good because you're not me. And you, in your situation, the type of person who you are, it's not in your best interest to do what I would do. So that is what he's discussing. Im yodato loy. If you know the person, I know who you are, I know your background, I know who your children are, I know your education, I know your values in life, then let me tell you what I think you should do. And the guy says to you, well, would you do this if it was you? No, I wouldn't, because I'm not you. Okay, many times people ask you, what would you do? If it was me, I would do this. So sometimes that is very good. That's a litmus test. I'll do it for myself. So therefore, that shows how sincere I am. I'll do it for you. But I'm not you. So if you know the person, chadricheu biderech yishar lefi mashenir b'yenecha liritzoyin hamakon. If you know the person, give him advice. Avaloy lefi darkoi shekineged haboyrei. These words are really a little hard to translate. I don't have clarity, but basically don't give him bad advice. Don't give him bad advice, but make sure the advice that you give him should be for his benefit, not necessarily for your benefit. From shooting, very simplistic things. Exactly. So therefore you have to know what's in his best interest. Im tishtoik, let's say you're silent and you say to him, I do not know. And you really do know what would be a good decision. So why are you being silent? It's many reasons why. It's not a good idea. Pen yishal me'acher v'yitin lo yitza she'eino hagenes. Don't be quiet. This may be the point that he wants to make over here is that it might not be obvious if we do not have someone to tell us this. It's not always good to say, you know something, there are risks and I don't want to get involved. I don't want to get involved in helping you make a decision because no one knows the future and there are risks. But you also have to take maybe close the door in the back. You have to also take into consideration the possibility that he's going to go to someone else. And if you go to someone else, it's very likely they are going to, it's going to be a lot worse. And what he's writing over here is such a popular thing. Now, today it sounds like to us like a dead issue. But go back 20 years ago, 25 years ago, when there was no art scroll English Gemara. And it was, all you had was Encino, and you had, just then, there was also a couple of volumes from Steinsaltz. And people wanted something of quality, not that Encino was not quality, but they wanted something more. They wanted something more in English. So in the yeshiva world, it sounds like it's super bizarre. There was a lot of opposition to give an endorsement on the art scroll English shas. Okay, it sounds like a joke to us, such a thing. But that's the way it was. It was a different type of world then, and it was believed that making an English translation, a new English translation of Talmud Bavli, would be detrimental for many people, because it would take away the quality and the excitement of learning. I told you, it sounds bizarre to us, but that's what it was. And there were very big debates. And there were Gedolei Yisrael who did not name, everyone knows Rav Shach. Rav Shach was very much against the article Shas, when it was coming out, and they wanted his endorsement. And now that he did not want to give an endorsement, he wanted to speak out. He wanted to speak out and condemn it. This is a fact. So these are no secrets. This is public knowledge. Condemn the printing of an art scroll shas of English, because he felt this is not what, and it was serious business. And people, Rav Shach's word had enormous weight, enormous power, and it would have had a major effect on the production. And probably the winning argument that won the day, when everything is said and done, was exactly what he writes over here in the Sefer Chassidim. We're coming to ask you for an endorsement of the Shas. If you're going to tell us no, so we're bound not to do it, because this is how we've been raised. We're loyal to Gedolei Yisrael. This is our charter. And if you are going to tell us no, we're not going to do it, because that's who we are. Artscroll will not produce a shas. There will not be an Artscroll shas. Okay, we won't do it. You know what's going to happen tomorrow? Someone else will do it. Someone who is not bound, who's not loyal to you and to this camp of Gedolei Yisrael. Not everyone, you know, they are very good Shomrei Torah u'mitzvos. They're very good people. They're great people, but they're not part of your machaneh. They're from a different machaneh. And they're going to make an English shas. One thing we can be certain of, we know the other machaneh. The quality and the loyalty to the Mesorah that will be produced by our competitors will not be anywhere near what we're willing to produce. And that argument won the way. That argument was the primary argument. There are many arguments why the misunderstanding was that, but that argument was the primary argument which persuaded many Gedolei Yisrael not just to give a haskama, but to give big, big heaping brachos on proceeding with these projects. The time has come where there's a need. Maybe you'll tell me you're right, it's not the best thing, that there are people out there that would be able to achieve greater heights in Ruchnius if they did not come on to a tool like art scroll. Okay, you can argue that the whole day. I personally don't see this makes much of a difference. But if you make that argument is indeed valid. But there's someone else that's going to do it, and it's going to be a hazard. They're going to inject into the product things which are not true, which are authentic to our Mesorah. That was a very critical argument, and that's exactly what he says over here. When someone comes to ask you for advice, and it's a problem, it's a very big risk, and your natural inclination is Mali Litzara Hazois. What do I need this for? What do I need this? You want to ask my advice? I'm going to give you advice, and that's going to happen. Who knows? Maybe my advice is no good. Leave me alone. So what's going to happen? They're going to ask someone else, and the people that they're going to ask, they're not sensitive to the depth of how serious this matter is. And they'll just, oh yeah, do this, do that. They'll give an answer. And the answer they're going to give will not be given with the seriousness that the issue deserves. And it will, and there's a much, much greater chance that it will result in damage. So therefore, he's saying over here a very powerful moral lesson. If someone comes to you and asks for your help, take into consideration what it means to say no. Many times you have to say no. I don't have the time, I don't have the resources, I don't have the talent. No is no. Push it. And sometimes you really can if you really wanted to, but I'm just not interested. Because, you know, let someone else do it. If the other person who will do just as good a job as you or better, very good, kol hakavod, leave me alone. But if you know you're doing something very serious here and you know it's going to be iskapashkit, the whole thing is going to be, you have an obligation. I actually saw this recently. I saw this in Aydavan Shabbos. It was a certain thing that needed to be done. And they asked the person, and they asked the right person to do it. Definitely asked. But the right person is a very busy person, and he didn't want to do it. He said to me, "I really don't want to do it, but I know if I'm not going to do this, I know what they're going to do. I know it's not the first time this happened. They're going to go and they're going to go down this path, and they'll get it done, and it's not good. It's not good. And I therefore, what am I supposed to do? I said, no. I'm going to tell them no. I have to do it. I don't have a choice. I don't have a choice. I have to do it even though I don't have the time, I don't have the energy. It fell in my lap. It's my duty. That's a responsible person. We could be like that. And that's exactly the limud of Musar that he's teaching us over here, to take that into consideration. And you really know what to do. Pen yishal me acher. This fellow may ask someone else. The yitain loy eitzo she'ena hoygenes. That is no good. It's not to his advantage. K'moy, now he gives over here. We're not going to go the whole story over here. Avshom nachi toifel. Can I have to myself brush up on this? I haven't really studied this in a long time in depth that it deserves. But basically, Avshalom rebelled against his father. Avshalom died. Avshalom was killed. Avshalom rebelled against his father. In fact, he was so successful, his father was on the run. And in the process of rebelling, he asked advice. And he asked advice from two people, Achitofel and from Hushai Ho'arki. Achitofel gave him bad advice. He gave him advice to rebel against his father. And Hushai Ho'arki gave him advice which basically led to him being killed. So who gave him the better advice? Hushai Ho'arki. Because even though ultimately it led to his death, Hushai Ho'arki, but at least he left this world in a state. These are very holy, you know, very, very mystical things. But to rebel against his father David and to bring about his father's death would not be to his credit in the next world. So Hushai Ho'arki, who gave him advice that caused him to be captured and to be killed, ultimately was for the benefit of the neshama of Avshalom.
Did he do it deliberately?
What? Yes, he gave him deliberately. Yes. K'moy she'os Avshalom, she'shol eitza me'achi toifel, he gave him bad advice. But who gave him the good advice? V'no'os Hushai Ho'arki eitza, good advice. What was the good advice? The good advice was that he fell in this. Look at the Mepharshim. He just touched upon the story. Look on the top. Look at the page. It's three lines down on the right side. To rebel against his father. Good advice not to rebel. And by not rebelling, he was trying to make restitution. And in that whole long story, Sha'al Yedei Eitzasai, the advice that Hushai Arki gave through that in the Skalgal Hadovar, Nofal Bia David. And that's called good advice. Good advice, he's dead. The answer is better die this way than be successful and die and be successful in what you're trying to do, because then you're not going to have any Olam Haba. V'zeretz and hamakim, v'im shasik. So the point over here is, Hushai is coming to tie this back to what we said before. If Hushai Ha'arki would have said, leave me alone, you're coming to ask me advice, I don't want to get involved in this, what would have happened? He would have continued to follow the advice of Achitofel. He would have been successful. He would have ended up killing his father, or his people would have killed David HaMelech, and then he would have been the new king, and Klal Yisrael would not be a Klal Yisrael. This would be a major, major catastrophe in a child being responsible for the death of his father, and in the next world, and even in this world, things would not work out the way they should. So therefore, Hushai Ha'arki made a very difficult decision to tell him something that he knew would result in him being captured and being overtaken by David's people and dying. V'im shasek Hushai ha'yoisa atzas achitofel v'hoye matzliach neged David v'dover zeh ha'yo lefi darkoi neged ha'borei. That would be, he would be, Avshalom would have been successful, but it would have been an act of rebellion against Hashem. So okay, I don't even know all the exact details of being quiet. I'm guilty of not preparing this adequately. But the basic idea he's trying to tell us is we have a similar story in Nach with David, his son Avshalom, who rebelled. He took away David's malchus. David was on the run. And in the process of trying to establish himself, Avshalom had an advisor, Achitofel, which helped him succeed. And then he had to ask a question. He asked another advisor, Hushai Ha'arki. Hushai Ha'arki could have just very easily said, leave me alone, don't get me involved. And if he would have been quiet, he would have then gone back to Achitofel and asked for more advice and would have been even more successful. Ultimately, David would have been killed by the army of Avshalom, and he would have been the new king, and his kingdom would have been illegitimate, and it would not be good in the long run.
There wouldn't be a basement.
There wouldn't be nothing. Everything would be, the whole thing would be a korban. So what did he say? I'm not going to sit by the sidelines. He's coming to ask me advice. I'm going to give you advice that's really for your real benefit. He's not going to tell you more details of how it's for your benefit, but he gave him advice which weakened his malchus, which resulted in David being able to once again resurface and overcoming the resistance, and then going on the offense. And his men, they shot all of these arrows. They shot. He was caught. He was running on the horse. He was caught by his hair. He was hung by his hair. V'chulu v'chulu. But all of this came about because of the advice of Hushai Ha'arki, who could have been quiet. Instead, he spoke out. And you want to go, if you want to go and extrapolate from this, you know, there's a very big, very big, very difference of opinion of how far a person should go and march and should be an activist. This has always been a very big sticking point in the different segments of Klal Yisrael. What degree should we, as the Orthodox Jewish community, go and, let's say, march on Washington? Should write letters to the editor of the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal? Advocacy. Estadlos. To what degree should we adapt the mentality of just, you know, sit at the sidelines and let other people make noise? Or should we be activists? How far should we go? So here, you can't draw a perfect analogy, because here the case is where someone is coming to you and asking for your help. So if someone is coming to you asking me for my help, if I'm going to be quiet and do nothing, there will be another organization that's going to come to the front, and they have very different values, which we find to be very problematic, and when they're going to represent the Jewish community, we're not going to be very happy. So maybe if there is an issue in the community and the government, they sent someone to the Orthodox community and says, you know, maybe you should present representatives to express your values, your ideas, maybe we should be much more aggressive in having proper representation for what we believe to be correct. Because if we just sit by the sidelines, what's the alternative? Someone else will do it for us, and then we're going to be complaining. What are you doing? This is not what we really want. On the other hand, sometimes it's not necessarily too good to be too much in the spotlight. Better take a back seat. Every situation is different. Years ago, it certainly was much more like that. The idea was don't wave your religious in front of the world. You know, today things are very different. Today the mentality is stand up for your rights. Stand up for your rights and be an advocate and be much more aggressive. It's a different generation. And the balance, I mean, many years ago, I didn't realize this before my time. My father told me that in Soviet Jewry was a very, very big machlaikis. A very big machlaikis. The Aguda really didn't know what to do. That's what my father would say. The Aguda, the more modern elements of the Orthodox, it was a much smaller world, Orthodox community. It's a much smaller world. And the Soviet Union was beginning to come apart. And there was an opportunity...
Way before that.
But you know what I mean? But there was an opportunity. Opportunities presented itself to do something for Soviet Jewry. And the question was how to go about doing it. Shiv University and modern Orthodoxy were very much in the Rashivas there, the Gedolim and the Shiv University, they took a very strong position of very strong public advocacy. To go all out, to march on Washington, to be out in the open. And the Aguda was, something my father explained to me, I hope everything is accurate, the Aguda was challenged.
Yeah.
The people were coming, what are you doing? What are you doing? Are you sending out your people, your students, your people that you represent to Washington to go on a march? What are you doing exactly?
I think Rabbi Teitz was against also.
And the Aguda more or less took a back seat. They decided, I don't know all the pratim, and they decided to be more behind the scenes than to be more out in the open. And my father said to me,
Yeshiva Flatbush over here.
Yeshiva Flatbush. Yeshiva Flatbush, right. And what, Yeshiva University. Yeshiva University. So my father said to me, that my father, no one knows the MS. No one's chas v'shalom coming to challenge Gedolei Yisrael on any spectrum. My father said to me, when it was over, it's still not over, but at a certain point in time, it seemed to become clear that the Aguda made a mistake, is that it would have been more effective to follow the pattern, and they acknowledge this, to follow, not Mayor Kahn, that's already extreme. No. We're not going to that extreme. Don't go there. We're talking about a balanced approach that was very much followed by Yeshiva University and the Rashid Yeshiva University. My father said it became clear, it became at least to the Hamoin Am, is that if they could have done it again, they would have, not 100%, whatever they would have done, they would have realized it's not always good to be 100% behind the scenes and take a back seat. A little more out in the open would have been better. Now, how do you know this taka true? This is true because years later, go back, I remember they did have subsequently, not against Soviet Jewry, unfortunately, that was already, but against the Medina, which, whatever. And what's very funny is those things turned out to be very ineffective. Years later, when they learned their lesson, they did have a number of demonstrations. A number of demonstrations where they rallied all the yeshiva boards. Everywhere. We went to all these yeshiva boards. Boston, you go to Water Street and this and that, the whole spiel. Who are they protesting against? Not against Soviet Jewry. That was already over. Now, the new problem was the draft. They're not going into the politics. Let's not even go there. That's not the point. But this is not the Aguda. The Aguda never advocated you should go out into the public and protest and march and have asifis in front of the embassies, in front of this. People should take note. They never did this before. It was definitely a reaction, a guilty conscience that for Soviet Jewry, we made a mistake. It was something there. It was a lingering after effect from Soviet Jewry. The problem was the things that they did later against the Medina backfired against them. It turned out to be totally ineffective, total waste of time. So when they should have, they didn't, and when they shouldn't have, they did. Listen, this is just saying foolish things. I mean, I'm just talking out loud. Not everyone that I say will agree with what I just said, because how can you be wrong? You can never be wrong. You can't admit. But there are a lot of smart people that I know that have made this assessment. People that are very right-wing have made this assessment, but of course no one ever officially will admit this, but there definitely is the struggle. There is always a struggle of what is the alternative to being quiet.
We had at our hotel this past Thursday, they stage always at least one debate where two rabbis get up and take opposite sides of an issue, and this was the issue, to be activist and out front or not. And
so who are the people who debated?
I forgot the other party, but the point is that they were taking the one who was against activism, who, by the way, that was not a popular position, depends on what the issue was.
Right.
And then on a particular issue, they said, well, this is not our fight. Abortion, that was the issue. That's not our fight. We what do we care? This was not well received. I'm saying this is just one example. Hey.
It all depends on the issue.
Just add that these debates usually produce more heat than light. But
it depends on the issue.
Not resolving anything.
Of course not. It depends on the issue, and it depends on the times. The times, the environment today, society is so different. It's so different. Even 10 years ago, it's a different world. It's so entrenched, and today you can't even imagine the way we used to think. Go back 20 years ago, we were totally in a different frame of mind. It was a different world. So you can't bring any proof. This is the Messiah. The Messiah is to do nothing, or the Messiah is to protest. There's no Messiah.
Well, yeah.
Nonsense.
Yeah, because in Europe,
no,
they
different.
Supposedly practice. Diplomacy.
So different.
I read
a book, a very, very, very nasty book about the state of Israel. One thing that really, really struck me. One thing really struck me about the difference in mentality of the mind between before the Medina and after the Medina, going back even 100 years ago, and after in the way the common man, when you think about Zionism, State of Israel, when you think about it, that totally changes everything, which is impossible for us to really to relate to. And that is, this is what he presents his argument, and I really believe it's true. Since Zionism began, this year, the numbers are 23,741 people have died on record. Not to mention people who died off the record. And not to mention how many people have been injured, have lost limbs, sight, hearing, and not to mention the thousands who have been psychologically damaged, and not to mention all of the collateral damage to the families of every single person who died or has been injured or suffers from the horror of war. Before the establishment of the state, no one ever fathomed the depth, the scope of how much blood and pain would come with the Medina.
Okay, great. And had there not been a Medina, you cannot calculate the harm that...
Exactly. I'm not coming to challenge that. But there's no question, if you're a human being, when you think about it, it totally changes. It changes the way you think. My mother had a very good friend who lived... who lived in Eretz Yisrael, a real American. She has a son, and during the expulsion in Gaza, right? When they threw everyone out. So all Americans, almost everyone was pretty much on the same page. What are you doing? What are you crazy mishagas? You're throwing out, you're abandoning Gaza. It's going to become a base for terrorists. Listen, I know from nothing. We don't know the big strategy, the big plan, and all the military planning, what the long-term goal is. All you know is my mother had a friend, an American just like her, who's made Aliyah many, many years ago, who has a son, and the son was on duty. And what did he do in his service? He was in Gaza. He went on patrols in Gaza. And every night, his mother could not go to sleep. Every night, she feared for his life. Mamish, every night. She herself suffered. So when they announced that they're getting out of Gaza, and her son, and she, I guess, could only she can sympathize with other mothers who have children who are going on patrols in Gaza, it was like the biggest Mashiach came for her. So we, in America, we don't even lift a finger, right? So we think, oh, you got to look at the big picture. Like exactly, the good big picture. You know something, you're right. And I'm not going there. You're 100% right. I just want to point out is that if you're a human being and you're afraid about death, it changes everything.
Okay, but you can't govern that.
You can't, right. And that's why Hashem made it in such a way where you make decisions not knowing, not having any thought of what's going to be in the future. Now that it's after, and there's 23,714 people who have died on record, plus all of the collateral damage that goes with that, when you think into the future, you think about decisions, it affects you. It has to affect you. So the way we think today is not the way we would be thinking if we were living 100 years ago. We don't think the same way, because it's different. When you see the suffering, it's just different.
That's why they don't send ground troops.
Okay, wait. So the way you make a decision, when you go and you have an organization, they're making decisions, you can't go question why then you do this now. You're living in a different time. And you're living after you have been affected by events. It changes the way you think. And you can't second guess, should have, would have, could have. We like to do that. But put yourself back in that situation. Go back in the time machine. Put yourself in that situation. Guess what? You wouldn't do anything different. You would do exactly what you did then. Because that you were at that point in time a product of the time, a product of the environment. When we look back and think, we say, but they were crazy. They were, mom, what are they doing? That's because we're living today and they're living then. We don't understand.
A lot of us knew then that
it was
crazy.
Okay, in a chanami. All right, let's stop here.
They are ignorant.
Don't tell me about that. They don't even...